नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, the beautiful story of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We're in Canto 11, Chapter 7, and this is the chapter about Lord Krishna instructing Uddhava. And text 42, I believe. Antahitascha stirjhangamaishu Brahmatma bhavena samanvayena Vyatya vyavachedam asangam atmano Munirna bhasvam vitatasya bhavayat Antahitascha stirajhangaheshu Brahmatma bhavena samandayena Vyatya vyavachi nama sammamatmano Munirna bhasvam vitatasya bhavayat Please chant.
Antaritascha stira jangaveshu
Antahita,
present within,
cha,
also,
stira, all non-moving living bodies, Yangameshu. And all moving forms of life. Vana-atma-bhavena. By realization that he himself is pure spirit. Samanvayena. As a result of the different contacts with different bodies. Vyaktya. Because of being all-pervading. Avyavyachedam. The feature of being undivided. Asangam. Being unattached. Atmanah.
Possessed by the super soul.
Munihi. A sage. Nabastvam. The similarity with the sky. Vitatasya. Of the expansive. Bhavayat. Should meditate upon. Translation and purport. A thoughtful sage, even while living within a material body, should understand himself to be pure spirit soul. Similarly, one should see that the spirit soul enters within all forms of life, both moving and non-moving, and that the individual souls are thus all-pervading. The sage should further observe that the Supreme Personality of Godhead as a super soul is simultaneously present within all things. Both the individual soul and the super soul can be understood by comparing them to the nature of the sky. Although the sky extends everywhere and everything rests within the sky does not mix with anything, nor can it be divided by anything. Purport. Although air exists within the sky or space is different from the air. Even in the absence of air, space or sky is present. All material objects are situated within space or within the vast material sky, but the sky remains undivided and, although accommodating all objects, never actually mixes with anything. In the same way, one can understand the situation of both the individual soul and the super soul. The individual soul is all-pervading because there are innumerable jivatmas which enter within all things, yet, as confirmed in Vedic literature, each individual atma remains infinitesimal. The Svetasatara Upanishad 5.9 states, you can all repeat, Balagra Shatta Bhagasya Shatta Bhakapitasya Cha Bhavo Jivasa Jiveya Sakanatyaya Kaupate. When the upper point of a hair is divided into 100 parts, and again each of such parts is further divided into 100 parts, each such part is a measurement of the dimension of the spirit soul. The same is stated in Srimad Bhagavatam. Keshagra Shatabhagasya Shatam Shatsadvishatmakaha Jivat Shukshma Sarupoyam Shantyatito Hichitanaha. There are innumerable particles of spiritual atoms which are measured as 1/10,000th of the upper portion of the hair. The Supreme Personality of God, however, is all-pervading because he himself is personally present everywhere. The Lord is known as Advaita, or indivisible. Thus, the same unique personality of Godhead exists everywhere, just like the sky, and yet is not attached to anything, although everything is resting within him. The Lord himself has confirmed this analysis of his all-pervasiveness in Bhagavad Gita 9.6. Tathakshatito nityam mayusavattago maha tathasadani bhutani matstanita upadharaya. As the almighty wind blowing everywhere always rests in ethereal space, know that in the same manner all beings rest in me. Therefore, although both the jiva soul and the super soul are said to be all-pervading, it should be remembered that there are innumerable individual living jiva souls, whereas there is only one Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord is always supreme, and one who is actually a thoughtful sage never doubts the supreme position of the Lord. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Sarvatara Shanti Bhakti Vinata Swamitaya Namaste Saraswati Gaura Namacharya Shri Shishinara Shakti Shri 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 So we're hearing more of the qualities of this very thoughtful sage, of how he actually thinks. And we can equate this term sage, I think, with a self-realized soul. Many people use this terminology these days of being such a great saint, such a self-realized soul. And here we see that this self-realized soul is understanding, like we heard in the last verse, that he's not this body. Prabhupada said that this is the ABCs of a spiritual understanding of self-realization, is to understand that you're not this body at all. Of course, we all know that that's a lot easier thought about than actually realized. But this is one of the qualities of such a self-realized soul. So there's different levels of understanding of what self-realization really is. I recently was traveling in several countries, and from the minute I left to the minute I came home, I had this realization that self-realization in this age is a whole new thing. That from in the airport, in the sitting in the seats of the waiting for the airplane to wherever they go, it's selfies. That they have realized totally that they're this body, and that now that they can extend their arm a couple more inches or three or four, and can have this realization that they are the center of the universe. Everywhere, from one minute to the next, no matter who they are, what they are, selfies, everywhere. I could just like, what's going on, you know? I mean, how many times can you change your profile picture in Facebook, you know? Every 2 minutes, a new picture of yourself. Self, 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 self. Everyone is completely absorbed now in themselves. It's really sad. It's actually pitiful. They go in front of these beautiful, you know, pagodas in Burma where we were, and gorgeous, you know, deities of Buddha and, you know, that's their background, a little background there, so they can get their mug shot in, you know. It's just like really, really sad. So, but there are people that are still searching for the self, searching, trying to find out the absolute truth, who they are. And therefore we can see that the very beginning stage of self-realization is to accept that you're not this body, although we wish we were sometimes, but after a while you're really glad you're not. But philosophically, some people can actually understand, yes, this body isn't changing, but I'm still here. My mother still says that I'm that person, but I look totally different. I have different desires. I don't like to play with little toys anymore. But I am different from this changing body. And so this is the beginning of spiritual understanding. But there's more to it than that. First of all, you have to realize that you're not your body. Of course, you know when you get that owie and it hurts and everything. Even the devotees it's not like you don't experience the owiness of it. But because we have the philosophical understanding that I'm not this body, and that I am something different, that I am a spirit soul, we can chant the holy names, or we can say, oh boy, it should have been a lot worse than that. Thank you, Krishna, or I deserved a lot more. You know, this is just mercy, oh, mercy, mercy. And therefore we can overcome that gross understanding that, yeah, I'm just this bloody thing on my arm right now. So this is a beginning understanding philosophically. It can be understood by many people. But there's an extension to that actually, as it's being discussed here, that there is a soul in everything. All living entities actually have that spirit soul in there. And now I think there's maybe New Zealand or France, I remember reading recently, that they've actually announced that they recognize other living entities as something spiritual. Anyway, they've made that advancement. And now even in India, they have announced that rivers are living entities. I'm sure you've all heard. Really wonderful. So that's even another step up, that we should actually take care of other living entities like rivers and not trash them, and not harm them. So that's an extension. But of course there's clauses under that. You know, my nice fuzzy wuzzy dog and cute little cat, these are on the list of living entities, of spirit souls. I can feel that spirit soul, but the mosquitoes and the skunks and the red ants, they're not on that list. You know, get rid of them if they're bothering us. They're not really spirit soul. So I was at the fair last weekend, and it was like the whole department was of save this, save that, save the frogs. Really, I think it said save the frogs. And someone, save the beagle dogs. Big, big signs. Save the bears. Now they've actually allowing you to go, you big, big old strong sportsmen, go in there and go in the cave and kill the hibernating bear. This is, and put it, the trophy on your wall. So now it's made legal. So they're trying to fight all these different things because there's a spirit soul in there. So, but it's limited what there is a spirit soul and what kind of living entities and what there isn't. So they still have to work on that level of self-realization. But we can accept not only these realizations that we're spirit soul and that every living entity that moves and like he said yesterday, that reproduces and dwindles and then dies is a living entity. But there's a higher absorption of the self-realized soul, and that is to see that we're not alone. When you become self-realized, well, let's say you can actually take a selfie of your spirit soul. That would be pretty nice. That would be worth taking a selfie of. But you're not going to just have your spirit soul there in the picture. You're going to, right next to you is the super soul. Prabhupada's described many times that you can't see yourself when it's dark in your bathroom in the mirror, not until you turn on the light. So automatically, simultaneously, you're going to see yourself and Krishna. So this is the highest realization that there are two, that there is ourselves and that there is the super soul. But there is a very big misunderstanding on so-called self-realized souls these days. That, and I was caught in this last snare, as Prabhupada said, that, oh yes, I'm spirit soul, I'm not this body, we're all one, we're all spirit. And actually, we must just be God. So they put Krishna's not in the picture. It's just me, again, that selfie of, yes, I'm everything. I'm the supreme of everything. So this misunderstanding is pretty rampant amongst transcendentalists. And actually, the devotees are very fortunate to really have this highest understanding, being the most thoughtful of all sages, that we are teeny, tiny, living entities. Here it's describing space. Space is inconceivable to think of space, what less all the other universes that are in space and everything that's in space. It's actually mind-blowing. And it's even more mind-blowing to see how small and insignificant we are in this little teeny bit of space. Although it's describing here we're all pervading, there's so many of us, Sarvagata, there's living entities everywhere. But we're still so, so very, very tiny. The Supreme Lord, the Super Soul, Krishna, is all expansion, all expansive, all pervading, but he's all prevailing in that he is within everything, yet he's aloof, he controls everything. He's not affected. He doesn't mix with the modes of nature like we do. His position is much, much different than ourselves. And therefore, we, as tiny little souls, should be respectful and understand our position. And therefore, accept that we should be serving that Supreme Personality. In the Bhagavad Gita, it says that the humble sage will see with equal vision the elephant, the dog eater, all these different things, like it's described in this verse. But that one quality, that one little qualification of being humble is so necessary to have those spiritual eyes. Because if you don't realize you're very, very small, then you won't be able to accept that there are other living entities and that there is a super soul within every one of you that is so much greater, and that we should be spending this lifetime as sages, our business being to find out how, yes, I can realize that soul, realize the Supreme Lord in my heart, and realize that relationship again. And work very hard in this lifetime. It's not going to be easy. We have a lot of work to do to understand that relation, that lost relationship that we broke off so many, many, many lifetimes before. But Krishna is so great. He's so great that here we are in this darkness with the lights out, not knowing our real self. But he offers, here's a shelter. And here's the night of the light of knowledge. You can actually now take shelter of me and find out who you are, and find out who I am at the same time. I got a Krishna.com letter just the other day, and I think it was yesterday. A girl was saying she was saying that I'm trying to write this paper, and I'm trying to hear from other people of what it feels like for some realization of the soul of what you're trying to, you know, preach to people. What in ISKCON, what do you feel? Would you describe it? She actually was an artist. She wanted to make a painting of what it feels like. And I said, that's going to be really tough to express as an artist what people feel. And I said, I wanted to make it short. So I said, actually, my realization, my greatest feeling, especially when I first came, and ongoing, is that it was like you were in darkness and all of a sudden someone switched on light. That all of a sudden you began to see things how they really are. That you were no longer in ignorance. That you could see that I was soul, that I am soul, what this material world is. You could see everything. And Krishna's so kind, he switches on that light for all of us. We wouldn't be here unless that happened. That now I understand who I really am and what I should be doing. Of course, doing it, that's another story. It's a lifetime of realization. But I think that's the feeling that we've all had, that there is knowledge, there is light, just like on the logo of the Back to Godhead, that this ignorance is darkness, but this knowledge, it is light. And we can see beyond, we can actually see that we can connect again, we can take shelter of Krishna, we can connect again and ultimately go back to him. It's very, our future is very bright. Now I was just spending 3 weeks in a Buddhist country, going all over, and I actually chose that place, Myanmar, they call it now, Burma, because they are very protective of their culture. And I wanted to see a culture that wasn't so westernized. And actually see, and it's a religious culture. So I got a good sample of the culture. We traveled, there's 10 temples there, believe it or not, in that little country. Very, very wonderful country, wonderful devotees. Couldn't talk to most of them. Very few know English, but they have a really good understanding of what Buddhism is. Now I do also. That the Buddhists are on that path of self-realization, but they don't have the connection. They don't have the connection to that bright, wonderful future of connecting again to God. Buddha is their guru. And they have great respect for their guru. Actually, the Buddhists are throughout the country, there's so many, that they're very much respected. They get the best seats on the airplane. Everyone moves away when they want to go somewhere. They're very much respected because they have gotten their self-realization program together to the point of being very renounced, understanding that they're not this body, that they don't belong here in this material world at all. And they are very renounced. They have, you know, whatever they can fit in a little teeny bag they wear over their shoulder. And, of course, they've got their cell phone in there, too. I didn't see them taking selfies, though. But they seem to be very devoted people, and there's all different ages and sizes and shapes of them. And there's the monkettes. They're out there early in the morning. The women Buddhists are also begging. They have a very short time of day that they can go out and beg, from 6 to 9 usually. And after the meal at noon, they don't eat anything else. They all shave their head. It can only get so far, and then they have to keep it that length. Even the women also. And they are, you know, very much detached, it seems like, from many things. We had a Food for Life program, and one favorable head of a monastery invited us to come and give out food. And the devotees made a fantastic feast, and they all very disciplined. They all march in a certain time according to their ages, and sit down and eat, and finish. And they're done, and they're gone. You know, no over sense gratification. So they have this idea of becoming detached. But what are they trying to understand is the question. Where are they going with that? What are they going to find when they find themselves in this kind of a void? It's unfortunate. They spend this whole lifetime becoming very detached, but they don't really have that light switched on and see themselves in Krishna. So I was feeling very fortunate the whole time, more and more fortunate that we have our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, who allows us that opportunity to take shelter of Krishna and to reconnect. And the Buddhists, they're a little short-changed, although they're on the path. And their whole life is spent, many of them spend their whole life doing that, although when we went to this monastery, I saw that there were, you know, very old ones, and all the way down to about this big, little teeny, weeny boy still in their pajamas, it looked like, coming in. Some people just donate their children to these monasteries and just leave them. Although they can, I guess, ultimately leave if they like to. There's a very interesting thing. It's like a summer camp. To become a monk, you can just go for the summer and learn some discipline. And the boy that came with us much of the time that spoke English, he said that he used to do that when he was young. He would go for the summer and become a monk, and he really liked it. He would go repeatedly summer after summer and learn whatever they teach and you know, sleep on the floor and do the austerity. So you can see this aspect of spiritual life is there amongst most religions, is that it's good to take yourself away from this material world and experience a little bit of detachment. It is a step in self-realization. And there's an interesting way that you kind of get initiated into becoming a monk is that we were in one shopping place. It's right next to a pagoda. Pagodas are the temples where everyone comes. And you actually have to take your shoes off because the pagoda's there and they've made the shopping mall around it. And you have to leave your shoes there, and everyone in the shopping mall is barefoot. So interesting. Everyone's walking around barefoot buying them. But in this mall, we noticed that they were buying very gorgeous outfits for these young boys, and they were all dressed up. They were leaving the shopping mall, and they had crowns and gold on, and you know, like a for a drama. And they told us that actually, and we saw later many times, that they put the young boy who wants to become a monk, who wants to renounce him, you know, go to this program, they put him on a chariot, and actually like in a cart, and they have a big procession behind them, and all the family members are carrying gifts and fruits and everything, and there's a band, and these boys are on the chariot, and they take them through the streets, all through the streets, like they're the king of the city. And they give them money and wealth and everything, and then they take them to the monastery. And that's it. Off comes the hair, off comes the everything, and that's your initiation to become a monk. So they teach you this renouncement, how to become very detached, but not how to become attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's really unfortunate that they don't have the last part of the equation. And that equation actually makes us very happy, that we can come and we can sing and dance in front of our lords and buy wonderful things. I bought a whole bunch of bags of things to offer to the deities and glorify the Lord with in so many different ways, which makes us internally very happy because we're connecting again. That circuit is made complete. And you plug in the into the outlet, you get a complete circuit. You get the electricity, you get the zap. So we have that pleasure that does give us that feeling that, yes, this is where I belong. I belong being connected to Krishna again. It's not that the Buddhists don't have some personal aspect, they do. And when we went to the first big, that's probably the biggest one in Yangon, which is like one of the capitals. It starts early in the morning, 4 o'clock, you can hear them chanting, and we went there very early at 6 o'clock. And so many groups all chanting something, but they have murtis, they have many, many Buddhas all around. And if you know the day of the week that you were born, you go to that one that's specifically that for the Tuesday, that Buddha, and you do Abhishek to that Buddha. So it's not like they don't think Buddha is a person, but they think Buddha is their guru. But some pagodas actually have toothbrushes for their Buddhas and things like that. So they do have some hankering to have some personal relationship, but it kind of ends there. And I'm sure they could probably come back again next lifetime and make the next step up in self-realization and become more and more thoughtful. Prabhupada, so thoughtful. Such a great sage that he saw through all of us, even us covered over with the mud of the Western society, so thick. But he saw through us and saw that we were suffering in this darkness, and did what he could by the mercy of Krishna working through him. He helped to deliver us all, and so. He was a great sage. He actually saw, in a humble state of mind, that we're the same. We're the same as spirit souls, just like everybody else. And so we have to develop that vision also, with the grace of Srila Prabhupada, that we can get rid of the cataracts of this false ego, that we can actually see that all the people out there are dying to connect to Krishna. Unfortunately, they're dying, and they're being reborn, and they're dying, and they're being born again without that opportunity to take part. So we have to give them that shelter. And how unfortunate it is when you give it and they don't take it. I was at that fair and talking to some people who are very, very much interested, and many times you know the conversation. When you talk to somebody, you say, yeah, this is an opportunity. We can just finish our business in this lifetime, and we can get out of here. And then I said, doesn't that sound like a good program to you? I said, it's going to be much worse. I want to get out of here. They start thinking. They go, well, I don't know. You mean you don't want to come back again? They actually are thinking that maybe it's going to be a little different. That maybe it will be better and that we will enjoy and that even though it's spirit, we can have something to do here and they get scared to think that they're going to leave this material world as they know it and go somewhere else where they don't know anything about. It can be very scary for people. And so scared to think that if there's going to be a supreme person, I have to deal with a person again. So it's so important that we get this knowledge about the spiritual world, how wonderful it is, and how wonderful and beautiful the Supreme Lord is, beyond our imagination how wonderful and beautiful He is. And I was actually feeling very remorseful that in throughout Burma, we noticed that whenever we gave classes, we would ask what canto. It was always the first canto. And then we realized that that's all they have translated, the first canto and the Bhagavad Gita. 153 languages in the country. And many of the Burmese can't talk to each other because they don't know the languages. There are some devotees that, of course, know Hindi because they're from Nepal. It's a very mixed culture there. Nepalese, and we went to Little Bihar. We had a Rath Yatra in Little Bihar. A good 1,000 or more people from Bihar were there, very enthusiastic, hugging Lord Jagannath. The person who took us around, his name is Srivas Pandit. He actually started all the centers and is responsible for all the work done in Burma. Fantastic person. And now he's got himself a printing press, and his father is fluent in English, and he's translating teachings of Lord Chaitanya and Nectar Devotion. So now they have a printing press, and hopefully they'll print those. But you can see that, you know, luckily Prabhupada put everything in the first few cantos, in the first canto. So they just hear the first canto again and again and again. But they're all becoming wonderful devotees and spreading Krishna consciousness. They are limited in what they can do in the country because it is Buddhist. You have to get permission to have Harinam, which is kind of a drag for me because it was, especially in the cities, there's such great places for Harinam. Even in Thailand where we went, in the tourist towns and near the beaches, oh, what a fantastic Harinam you could have on those beaches. People from all over the world. But they have to get permission. You can't just go do Harinam. And if you see any interaction of money to distribute books, you are nipped. You are in trouble. So, in both countries. So, they're working on getting, legalized or authorized, but it's a struggle. But the devotees are very patient. They're working, you know, very carefully not to push themselves on the country. And, hopefully, Prabhupada's blessings that they'll get that permission. But the temples are thriving, and I went to two Rath Yatras, and then there's another one. They're building a huge Jagannath temple in the north of Burma, which is only 50 miles from the Chinese border. Beautiful, gorgeous structure, have nice deities there. And their Rath Yatra they have on the same day as Rath Yatra in Jagannath Puri, and they're expecting probably 4,000 people to come to that Rath Yatra. So it's becoming popular. The people in Burma really like Jagannath. But they have, in the other temples, they have gorgeous gorni ties and ecstasy like this, with their heads way back, and they have, they're all the altars are, of course this is my pet peeve, but all the altars are all carved in Burma, by the people there. Beautiful work. Boy, they can work fast, I tell you. 8 hours a day from 7 to 7. They make a couple more dollars than I do an hour probably. But gorgeous, everything's carved. Beautiful, beautiful altars they all have. And they have Radha and Govinda, and they have Sita Ram deities, gorgeous full-sized worships going on very nicely. So it's nice to see that we have a family everywhere and that we all have the same goal of self-realization is to connect again with our supreme, wonderful Lord, Sri Krishna. And we should be very thankful to Srila Prabhupada, the most thoughtful of all sages, that we have this opportunity in this lifetime to reach this perfection of actually loving and serving the supreme Lord. So anyone have any questions? Or? Yes, sir? So much for technology.
Got it. I'm wondering how are most of the devotees in the 10 temples, are they originally Buddhists that come to Krishna consciousness, or are they from Hindu background?
A lot of them are from Hindu background, most of them.
Do any of the Buddhists come?
Yes.
Yeah. That'd be interesting to hear their trajectory in taking up Krishna consciousness. It seems like it's so thick, the Buddhist culture.
Very thick, yeah. But some actually have, and but not numbers.
Yeah. The other question I had, if you got a letter on Krishna.com for a student that was going to draw or paint a painting of realization of super soul, how would you respond to that?
I said, good luck. I said, I don't know how you're going to do this. I just tried to get my little dark and light. Maybe she can get something from that. But she didn't ask so much about the super soul. But you know, of course, Prabhupada, you know, he was very blatant. And someone asked him, you know, so you know, you can see, so you know, you can see God. Yes, I can see God. The devotees were like, no, you know, the Papa would say that. He says, is he lying? He says, yes, I can see him in my heart. And he says, oh, so is he lying down or sitting up? And Papa goes, close his eyes. I think he's lying down. So, Papa was very, he could see Krishna, you know, but, we know what super soul looks like. She didn't ask for a picture. So, I don't know. Hopefully she'll read our books. Yes, Manavati.
You're mentioning about describing the renunciation of these monks, and I was thinking renunciation is certain in opulence. It's very attractive, and it's not something we as devotees so much. Our emphasis is our sadhana and worshiping Krishna. But do you think renunciation is something that we need to talk about, or it's not necessary? It's because it is attractive, you know, to have certain amount of renunciation, or maybe we are renounced. I don't know.
Many people are thinking that we're renounced, especially as far as the four rules and regulations. You know, Papa said that. A king or something said impossible, you know, that to not have sex life and impossible. But I think they see us as somewhat renounced. But we don't, you know, inflict ourselves in pain, you know, because it can also make your hearts very hard. So devotees are soft-hearted. So Papa has given us, I think, enough. He didn't say that we should pour more on. So we're not, I don't think we're doing anything that Prabhupada didn't say to do, although some people can, you know, put more on, only if it's giving you advancement in Krishna consciousness. So one has to be very careful that it's just not some false renunciation. I mean, I looked at the faces of these monks and they weren't so terribly blissful. You know, it's not like they're beaming or jumping up and down or dancing or anything like that. And they're definitely not like out there to preach or to spread it. So I think, a little bit too much dosage is not so favorable. So keep our balance. Yes, Chirakam.
How do the Buddhists view our practice? I mean, I guess you must have gotten some feedback.
They don't, they're very harsh on that. They don't believe that Buddha was an incarnation of Krishna. So, they're not arms open for us. They don't agree on that point, which is one of our main points, is that they actually, by worshipping Buddha, they are doing some worship to Krishna, but they don't accept that. Yes.
I met a boy at the university the other day. He studied theology. And we were talking for a while, and then I said, have you heard of the Hare Krishnas? He said, oh yes, I went to the temple in Berkeley or someplace in California. I said, what do you think? He said, they make God realization so simple. You have to chant, you do a little service, and you're supposed to realize God. That is too simple. So he said, I'm going to spend 4 years trying to study what is this God realization. And I said, isn't it, doesn't it make sense that somebody something very
simple. Didn't you have a good time there? He said, yeah, but why would they have 4 years to study theology if it's that simple?
To spend 4 years just studying theology.
Yeah. So I was a little dumbfounded at first. I thought, wow, you know. And then I said, do you have any books? Do you read the books? He said, I have a Bhagavad Gita, but it's so simple. Everything is so simple. You have to chant Hare Krishna.
So just do it.
I was telling him,
you can add your complicated stuff on it, but at least chant.
But it's like, you know, the opposite's usually there, the opposite.
Yeah, yeah. Too good to believe.
The other thing I was thinking is, Buddha, the incarnation of Buddha, was to take people away from the Vedas. So if they're worshiping Buddha, there's only so much they can do. They're not going to come to the Vedas if Buddha took them away from the Vedas. So
they have their own principles, teachings. The very first principle, first Bhagavad Gita went to, big sign, that there are five main principles. The first one is thou shalt not kill. All the Buddhists that we saw eat meat. They all eat meat. When they go around collecting whatever they put in, they say, we asked them, they said that we're not killing. They give it to us. That guy over there did it. We're not killing, but we can eat it. So,
like the Christians, they accept what they want.
Yeah. Anyway, this is their belief.
Krishna. Thank you. I was brought to this one Wat with the monastery, and this was the head monk. He was actually an advisor to the king. And I was asking, well, how is it that you're eating the meat? And he said, same thing you said, that whatever they give us, we have to accept. So then he asked me, don't you get bored just eating meat? So normally I would answer that question by saying, well, there's so many things you can do with vegetables. That's what, you know, you can make kofta. But for some reason, I don't know, Super Soul made me think, I said, well, do you get tired drinking water? Do you get tired breathing air? You know, in other words, whatever sustains you, that's what's sustaining you. And so, but the other part in Thailand is that everywhere there was murtis of Lord Brahma in every corner, every intersection. Mm-hmm. And then also, I went to this Emerald Buddha temple, and they had a mural of the entire Ramayana on the walls. So they have some connection with, you know, and, you know, of course, Prabhupada also said Siam was actually Sham. So there's connection. It's just confused.
Now, it's that one big little Brahma in front of the hotel. That was because the owner started worshiping Lord Brahma. Was able to get the money. There's a whole story about how he made that big hotel because he worshipped Lord Brahma. So after that, people started worshiping Lord Brahma because they realized they could get some success. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, because this one monk told me, he said that we, on one level, we understand that there's someone beyond Brahma. They had some understanding there's something beyond that.
Yeah, I've actually seen pictures of Vishnu and Narayan in monasteries.
Right.
Yeah. Real, a little confusing for them. We were quite confusing. We had our heads turned. It was like going to India for the first time. Everyone was looking at us, jerking their head, looking at us in Burma because they couldn't figure out. We were wearing saris, but we had white skin. Because we asked the person, why is everybody looking at us? They go, they're confused. They can't figure you out. Because the Hindus, they wear some saris there, but they couldn't figure out why a white person was wearing a sari. It was interesting. And the culture is really nice. Everyone wears lungis. All the men, all the women, no matter who you are, they all wear the sarong. All uni. No, you don't see any ladies' legs at all. No men's legs, nothing. Very, quite chaste, but quite nice.
I'm sorry.
are you aware of the kind of meditation that we're doing in this part of the world? Is it like the Vipassana meditation?
I don't know what they were doing. They would they had some mantras that they chant, and it seems like their meditation is on begging. I guess they study. This boy said that they do study some scripture, and that I could hear over the loudspeaker them chanting mantras and songs and things like that. But it's not. I don't know what the thing with the beads though, like the Nam-myoho Renge-kyo, they do the bead things here in America. That section, they said that they actually beads are Maya. That actually they kind of keep them, you know, because everyone's gotten into it, but. Normally, there was no chanting on beads. It actually is Maya.
Are they chanting in Sanskrit?
Huh?
They
I don't know what they were chanting, and I don't think, no.
They used to
chant. Well, that's what the devotee said. But that's with their consideration. Because you think of Buddhists with beads, but it's not the norm. It's a new thing.
Is most of the country vegetarian?
No. A lot of fish eating because it's surrounded by water. A lot of fish. Mama?
I have a conversation with Buddhists in this country. I think there's like two major philosophies.
Oh, I think there's more than two.
Yeah, well, but, you know,
yeah.
There are
some that are vegetarian.
The Buddhists all not are atheists.
Yeah.
They're not on a path to God the way you're describing. The ones I've met in America.
No, they're very much atheists. Although they think their guru is more or less the all. And so there's so many different sections. They just busted a temple in Thailand. Well, one of their things for smuggling tons of money, they had to run everybody out and hide and try to find the man that was doing all the smuggling of money from their so-called worship. So, yeah. All kinds.
Madhalila chapter 9. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was passing by South India, Buddhist monastery, and Prabhupada writes that whole Buddhism is based on these two principles, two philosophies, Hanayana and Mahayana. And there is a nine principles, and Prabhupada gave that nine principles.
And in the Bhagavad Prabhupada,
who are richer in our ISKCON society, they should be aware of this philosophy in order to preach. But I was researching on Mahayana. They have mostly that you are seeing in Burma and Thailand, they are Anian, not Mahayana. The Tibetan, which influenced the Western world most, not really Thai Buddhism didn't influence as much as, but that philosophy is different. They have this non-differentiated bodhisattva. The goal bodhisattva means where the intelligence merges after dissolving this body. They separate the soul from the physical body. What they come on, their reincarnation is accepted on the base of that. But when you say, who am I? The I also dissolves. Dissolve doesn't mean lost. One group in Canada, they say, Richard, at least I spoke, that it's a non-differentiated, you can say all-pervasive existence, where that by the intelligent, you dissolve yourself there, you are at that point is the intelligent. Because there is no soul as identified separately from the intelligent. So that's where Bodhisattva boils down. They do not say that you are lost or you do not exist. But in one sense, if you literally challenge them that who am I, who are this body or the mind, they don't.